shine. Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me. Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me. Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me.
Holy One that come from peace.
Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me.
Oh, come to tell us we are free.
Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me.
But I know we'll let it be.
Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me. Feel the light that shines in me.
Welcome, welcome, once again, One Love Center Presents. Welcome to One Love Center Presents, a book study of The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. My name is Rodney Giddens, and I'm your host tonight. And we should have a guest host, Hajar Rahim, joining us soon. And I see we have some callers on the line, and let's introduce Hajar right now. And Hajar, please say hello to all of our wonderful listeners live or in the archives soon to come.
Okay, how you doing? Rodney, would you put me, I'm on the other number, the 718-59 number.
I got you.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So do you want both lines on? Okay. So
okay.
We have Hajar Rahim, the newly appointed, anointed, Reverend Hajar Rahim, who is joining us today as well as pretty much every Wednesday. As we cover The Power of Now, we do so because it's the book of A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment. And we're so glad that you are listening and you are joining us. And I just want to say that One Love Center is an awesome opportunity to further know the very presence of God within you. One Love Center is a member of Centers for Spiritual Living. We are a teaching chapter located in Brooklyn, New York. Excuse me. We meet the first and third Sunday of the month, which means we meet this Sunday. at 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn. That's between Washington and Underhill Avenue. Sunday celebration starts at 11:30 a.m. at a venue called the Village at Gareje. And it's a wonderful venue that has many different artists and activities that go on. There's sketching, there's improv, voice, how would you say? There's a voice workshop that goes on. There's just so many wonderful activities that go on there. You can look them up, actually, at the Village at Gareje. That's the Village at G-U-R-E-J-E. And we've been meeting there for 3 years. So One Love Center is an awesome place. We are a place where love grows. We are a community of fellowship, meditation, prayer, sacred service, spirituality, spiritually supported healing services, as well as spiritual speakers, one of them being Reverend Hadra Rahim, as well as myself, Rodney Giddens. We have great music, most definitely to transform you. We have study workshops, spiritual films, and classes for your enlightenment, for your unfoldment, for your growth, for your, most certainly, your enlightenment. And that's why we're covering the power of now. So I'd like to say that we are in Chapter 9. The chapter is called Beyond Happiness and Unhappiness, There is Peace. And we've been swimming around in Chapter 9 for a while, and it's so deep, and we've been coming up for air every now and then. However, we are now in the section called Toward a Different Order of Reality. And it's wonderful because, and we'll do a brief summary. Actually, we'll summarize the past session, which was the nature of compassion. And the nature of compassion, as Eckhart Tolle mentions it, is once we realize we're on the same playing field, and he doesn't put it that way, but I do, that the bottom line is that we all, at some point, are going to experience death of the body, a change in the form. And that's the one thing that he says we really do have in common. So because of that, we should be compassionate with each other. He says, a few years from now, 2 years or 70 years, it doesn't make much difference. Both of you, and he's pretty much talking to whoever we are in touch with, both of you, ourselves and anybody else, will become rotting corpses. He says, then piles of dust, then nothing at all, if that's possible. I add that, but he says nothing at all. He says, is this a negative thought? No, it's a fact. Why close your eyes to it? In that sense, there is total equality between you and every other creature. So when we have that realization that we are all alike, then we can definitely have greater care for one and ourselves and another. He goes on to say that the moment comes when all mind forms or thoughts also die, yet you are still there, the divine presence that you are, radiant, fully awake. Nothing that was real ever died, only names, forms, and illusions. And so I think that's another reason why we would exercise compassion with ourselves and others. Because it's pretty much what he's saying is it's all an illusion. And this illusion, why are we investing so much angst into an illusion?
Right.
You know, let's just support each other, love each other.
It's a pretty strong illusion. Yes, it is. And it's really something we hold fast to. But he said, you know, you are still there, the divine presence that you are, radiant and fully awake. That's like, you know, in the Quran, it teaches you that sleep is the sister of death. And so when you're sleeping, where are you? Who's doing the dreaming? And what happens in the dream? That's your essence. That's beyond the form, which is the body, which doesn't go anywhere. It's still in the bed where you are. But when somebody dies, you know, we do definitely miss that form being there. This week, we've had a couple of deaths in our community in Seattle, where I was a member of for a number of years. And, you know, it's sad to see people just suddenly die and go. But we do know that, you know, their divine presence is who they are, really, and the body is just a form. And like you said, nothing that was real ever died, only names, forms, and illusions, which change. And we know that that's the change that we are a part of, and we can see it in our bodies as we age and continue on this plane, things happen. But to come to the reconciliation that, you know, you are part of you, this form is not who you truly, truly are. And one of these days, what the Christians say, you will give up the ghost, you know. you will let it go. And to be able to be reconciled to that is a wonderful thing. And from what I understand about near-death experiences and when people do die, they leave their bodies, I would say that they leave the body, that's a very peaceful time for them. They just go enjoy, and they see another reality. They see the reality that they are not the body. And when they see that at that moment, then they are in a state of bliss. It's just amazing to witness that transition.
Have you ever had anything close to that?
Yes, I have. I had one near-death experience where I was actually in the tunnel and saw the light, you know.
And was that one of those moments where it's like, go to the light or don't go to the light?
Yes, it was one of those moments, yeah, go or not go. And what happened, I was going towards the light, but my sister kept calling me back, you know, and she called me back, and so I turned around, and I went back, you know.
Well, I have a question. How do you know you went back?
Because I actually physically turned around.
I physically turned around in that moment
and went the other way.
Right, but what if that's part of the? What if you went into the light and all of this is just everything after the light?
Exactly, and this is the thing too. We're talking about this illusion, you know, is really
right.
Strong.
So I'm saying we could all be part of your
my illusion.
Well, thank you very much.
It's a pretty nice illusion.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we're part of each other's illusions. You know, they say, you know, we call our fellow actors and partners in this life and people that we interact, we call them into being to experience whatever it is that particular relationship has for us to experience so that we can grow spiritually, you know, and emotionally. And one of the things, you know, like the negative and the positive, you know, we have those people who we call into our lives who show us the love and the compassion. And how to be that love and compassion. I've had those people in my life. And I've also had the people who came to teach me a lesson on how to be more loving and compassionate myself with them, and that was a challenge, you know, for me.
Yeah, I think most of the time that happens.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really, like, ask them, oh, could you come by and give me a reason to show you compassion?
Yeah.
Can you give me a reason to show you forgiveness? I need to, I'm a little low on my forgiveness quotient.
Yes, quotient, yeah.
You know, I'm going to for a moment just believe that I'm separate and apart, you know, from the Creator, and that therefore I can be harmed and hurt and suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so Eckhart Tolle is saying, you know, once we get out of that,
right.
we get back to our realization of who we are, that we no longer have to suffer, even though suffering brings us to that point, he says.
Right. It brings us to that point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can't walk up to, you know, joy and peace you know, without going through suffering first. You know, we can't just get compassion you know, unless we're suffering in the throes of
of grief and disharmony, yeah.
And illusion.
Yeah, and that's what I love about Ernest Holmes. He's saying, you know, in terms of the teachings in the science of mind, that it's the latter. It shows you how to get there as opposed to somebody saying, well, this is where you ought to be. Yeah, okay, so show me how to get there, you know. And he has that ladder. He has those steps and those spiritual tools that we teach that shows people how to do that, and it's your spiritual practice that we undertake. And as we do that, it's climbing the mountain. We just keep going up, you know, day by day, step by step. And as we do that, we see a greater and greater vista where we can get to that place where you have that clear, fresh air that you can breathe in when you're up in the mountains, and you can see for miles around you, and you can see where a lot of this, you know, that we thought was had to be a certain way, we can let that stuff go and just enjoy life. So it's a journey. It's not a destination. It's a journey, and it takes time to get there.
You know, what's interesting is even when we say it's a journey,
mm-hmm.
You know, I always have in this picture comes into my mind of the Wizard
mm-hmm.
of Oz.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
had to get to the Emerald City.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So she was on a journey.
Right.
And it wasn't as smooth as, you know, she would have liked or the viewers would have liked. You
right.
know? However, she gained a lot of lessons on the way, lessons
right.
and blessings, and she got stronger. And not only that, but the people who traveled with her actually got stronger.
Right.
In the midst of all these things happening on the path, on their journey.
Right.
They all
mm-hmm.
were on separate journeys, even though they were traveling together.
Right.
They all something for each and every one of them
mm-hmm.
to discover or uncover or
right.
recover.
Right.
You know, the Tin Man, the Lion, and the Straw, well, I don't know about the straw, the Scarecrow.
The Scarecrow, yeah, he had a straw brain.
But
yeah.
Some of them had to recover
mm-hmm.
something. You know, there was a cowardly lion. I think maybe at one point in his life, maybe he had some strength and courage, you know,
mm-hmm.
but some of it is recovery. And what they all did was discover that everything they wanted was within them.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
But they were living illusions
mm-hmm.
that they did not have those things.
Exactly. And we come to, it goes from the unconscious to the conscious realization of that truth, because we are unconscious of it. And as we take this journey, we become conscious of it, that, oh, I've had this all along, but we didn't know it.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, saying you are, you know, you have $1 million in the bank, but you don't know you have $1 million, so you think you're poor, you know.
Right.
And then you find out I have this $1 million, and you had the $1 million all along, you know, but you didn't know it. And so it's the growth of consciousness from being unconscious of certain things to becoming conscious of it. And once you become conscious of it, then you realize, well, you know, it was there all the time, but I was not aware of it.
Right. So what we're
yeah.
really discussing is how to become conscious.
How to become conscious, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think it's what Eckhart Tolle is talking about is through pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like to, I mean, all of us probably would like to get to enlightenment the easy way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with just saying the magic words, doing our affirmations, doing our prayer work, our treatment work. It reminds me of the path we take studying almost anything. However, studying to become spiritual practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing a coursework and not getting stuff right away.
Right.
Oh, it's like the chapter we're studying now is about maybe love or compassion or something. And we do the written work and we read the books and we talk about it. And, okay, yeah, I kind of, you know, I understand it kind of, but we don't really until something comes up.
Right.
But in that week that, you know, that's either coming up or the week that has just passed, we realize, you know what, I just went through something, and now I understand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
somebody
yeah.
on my toe, and I didn't lash out, or I wanted to lash out, but I looked at them, and I felt something different. I felt
right.
compassion. Did they really mean to hurt me? Can
mm-hmm.
I really be hurt? Is it just my
mm-hmm.
form, which
mm-hmm.
is my ego, which
mm-hmm.
is being hurt?
Mm-hmm.
Is that which within me that allowed me to observe what happened? I get to see, oh, they stepped on my foot. Now I get to decide, how am I going to be? Am I going to be angry? Am I going to, let's say, don't do it again? Or am I going to move away from the, you know? So in that those moments when we are deciding how we're choosing to be, we're getting to see that, wait a minute, you know, it's not all cut and dry anymore. I have choice. You know, I'm realizing I'm coming from a certain place, or I'm trying to get to a certain place in recognizing who I am. So, yes, my toe hurts because somebody just stepped on it. What am I going to do? If they're still standing on my foot, I ask them to move, or I make them move and push them off, depending on the severity, you know, of that physical pain that I've agreed to,
right.
You know, because I'm agreeing to form. I'm agreeing that the form is real, not an illusion.
Right.
Well, the illusion really hurts a lot. You know?
Yeah, it can.
So we have to go through this stage, you know, in our journey of realizing, okay, there's pain, and now there's a moment of suffering. It could last a second or it could last for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moments, minutes, years, whatever. That's our journey. Now, do I always remember that I just came off of a journey and that I'm being, you know, so-called spiritual, I'm an enlightened being, that I have compassion, or do I need another lesson?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like sometimes we just need to keep having lessons. We don't maybe need to, but we keep creating opportunities for more lessons until we get it.
Until we get it.
Until what?
And then...
inviting it from coming back.
Right, and if it shows up, the way that you know that you have actually gotten the lesson is that when the situation comes up again, and they will come up again, is how do you react to it? And you can tell by your reactions as to, am I reacting with love and compassion, or am I still reacting with a certain amount of anger, resentment, or whatever negative energy I have here? And that's where we do our work, in those areas where we identify, oh, I have this to work on because I got upset and I shouldn't, you know, spiritually there's nothing to get upset about because it's all an illusion and I can just let it go. And can I let it go quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Or do I hold on to it? And that's where we know that we have that work to do. I know one time when I was still doing my principal thing, I had made this commitment to the staff that, you know, we were talking about what we were going to work on spiritually. We didn't call it that, though, our attitudes and stuff like that for the year. And mine was patience. And I'm working on my patience. And they said, oh, Hadra, you just called up a whole lot of people who's going to test your patience.
Sure.
You're going to be tested in your patience all year, you know. And I'm like, I know that. I know these what situations and people are going to come up to test my patience and see where I'm at with it. And so as things happen, I remember I said that I wanted to practice more patience. And so therefore, you get the opportunities to do those things that you say you want to do. And I did them, you know, and I really grew in my level of patience. And it's just really, really nice. But I had to go through that. But knowing that that's what my intentions were, enable me to look at the situation and say, okay, this is the time that I get to practice my intention of being more patient. And it really, really helped just consciously. See, the thing about it is consciously knowing this stuff as opposed to unconsciously being in those situations and then reacting to them.
Well, yeah, and that's, it doesn't come automatically. You know, it does take some study and some inner work.
Right.
You know, self-help or whatever it takes to get to that realization of doing that. So, yeah, that's certainly commendable that we can ask for it, and then you got to remember at some point that, yep, you asked for it, you know.
Yeah, and here it is.
Yeah, because with all the spiritual principles, you know, they are all within us. They are all a part of who we are. It's just a matter of getting in touch with them and living from them.
Right.
You know, and then... I mean, and what Eckhart Tolle talks about compassion, and I think a compassionate person would want to mindfully practice spiritual principles, mindfully practice compassion.
Right.
Now, you know, he says on page 163 about getting in touch with compassion, that there are two aspects of compassion, and we talked about this before, feelings of sadness and joy, seemingly opposite feelings, and that they merge into one and become transmuted into a deep inner peace. And there might be different ways of looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
They can merge, or, I mean, joy is joy. I mean, it's a standalone kind of spiritual nature. You know, sadness to me is what we experience based on our beliefs, and when we're not allowing joy to be ever-present.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's, I think, how sadness occurs.
Okay.
And yes, you know, we miss a loved one who has left the plane of existence. And, yeah, it's not, we're not going to feel joy necessarily. However, there are some people who may have some training in their lives where when somebody goes to the next plane, they feel joy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, and I've heard of this. I've heard of a society where they mourn. They go through mourning when somebody is born.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you poor person, you come into this world. Boy, have you got some stuff in store for you. We feel for you. You know. And then when they check out, it's like, yes, you know, you've run the course, you've made it. Oh, you're going on to greater glory, and we, you know, and it's different than the way that most of us have been brought up.
Right.
But it's just as valid as anything else.
Right.
So I think sadness is kind of arbitrary, depending on your culture.
Right.
As well as joy, or the expression of joy. Joy is always within. I mean, there can be joy in sadness. We can be joyful to be able to express the sadness for somebody coming into the world.
Right.
Or checking out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when they call it a home, what is it, a homegoing.
A homegoing, yeah, celebration of life, yeah.
You know? So I think in those ways, yeah, that's when I can see how he says joy and sadness merge.
Right.
You know, resulting in a deep inner peace. Because we're not labeling what either one has to look like. And so he says that becomes healing and transformative power. And that's what, at least one of the ways he says that we're going to recognize compassion.
Right.
Because it does not happen until sadness merges with joy, the joy of being beyond form, the joy of eternal life. So it's interesting how he says sadness merges with joy. But then, to me, it's more like sadness disappears into joy. You know, like joy just overwhelms sadness. To me, that makes more sense.
Okay.
Like it merges, sadness just becomes no more. Because we're talking about the joy of eternal life.
Right, but at the same time, you still, people still, I know I still miss the presence, you know, their form here. And so as we talk about, even though you can be joyful, which I am joyful at some people's transitions, I can't say I'm joyful at everyone's transitions, but I can recognize that there is joy in that, you know, for them. And I recognize that for them, but for me, there's a bit of sadness because they're no longer where I can touch and feel them or talk to them and stuff like that, at least not physically, you know. And so I think that they are not necessarily, they can be concurrent in your own emotions at the same time. You can be joyful and sad at the same time, but the joy is greater than the sadness.
Yeah, well, I mean, see, but I just want to get back to his point is that, yes, if we're having that experience that you just mentioned, and we're not moving forward on our on the path, you know, as we're still experiencing sadness, we're not getting true compassion. You know, we're not being in the power of now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what he's saying, that as long as we're experiencing sadness, which is probably still caught up in form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sadness would be, yeah.
Joy is not going to fully overwhelm it because we're still holding on to the form.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And so I think that's his main point. And that leads us into the next section toward a different order of reality. And this is where we started playing around last couple of weeks, that it's all perception.
Right.
So when you perceive, like you said, okay, I missed the person's physical presence, there's a sense of sadness.
Right.
However, when we get into the joy of eternality,
mm-hmm.
then we're not feeling the sadness anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We are more in touch with the oneness.
Right.
So we can feel a greater sense of that so-called person because we're all one. I'm feeling spirit as one.
Right.
There is not going to be sadness. So, you know, he says, he talks about the body. He's going back into form.
Mm-hmm.
Body and death are part of the same illusion.
Right.
Created by the egoic mode of consciousness, which has no awareness of the source of life and sees itself as separate and constantly under threat. So it creates the illusion that you are a body, a dense physical vehicle that is constantly under threat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my question is that I like to ask myself and other people is what is, and we had touched on it before, like when we talked about, when you mentioned being in a dream state.
Right.
Or near-death experience and going toward the light. It's like if you're in a dream and you're doing astral traveling or something like that, And have you ever gotten a feeling, I don't mean this is like going toward the light, but do you ever get the feeling like, you know what, I don't want to go back to my body anytime soon. I just want to hang out in this realm.
Okay.
You know, have you ever experienced that?
I haven't experienced that.
You know, where, and I have, where it just feels like, you know, this is a pretty cool feeling. You know,
okay.
You look down and see my body or something, and...
Mm-hmm.
And I can just, in less than what I can recognize to be a thought, I am somewhere else. I don't know if I'm
right.
in another galaxy, I'm in somewhere around another planet or this planet or whatever, but the that sense of reality seems to be a great place to want to hang out, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it talks about a different order of reality. So
right.
looking at the body and death are an illusion.
Right. Now, interesting you talk about that because I just had this conversation with my nephew who was here for the wedding, and he talked about his consciousness leaving his body and how it just spooked him out. He said, but, you know, he was in a car, and all of a sudden he was somewhere up in the universe looking down at the car, you know. And it scared him, so he said, I want to go back, and then he was back in his body. And then it has happened on several occasions where his consciousness would just leave his body, and he can look back and he can see his body, and he said, I don't know what was going on, but he had those experiences where he was actually out of the illusion of the body. But he didn't understand it. This is what we were talking about before, being consciously aware of what's going on as opposed to operating in fear because we don't understand what's going on. You know, it's like going into a dark room. You got to turn on the light in order to see where you're going. Otherwise, you start bumping into stuff. And then you become afraid because you don't know what's in there. But as we learn these different spiritual tools and what's going on with the illusion that we're all in, that we're all a part of, and we can wake up from the illusion, and we have glimpses of it from time to time, like you had a glimpse of it, he had a glimpse of it. I haven't had that type of an experience, but I know that I sometimes think about what would it be not to have this body and still be conscious of myself, you know.
Exactly. That's exactly
yeah.
my
mm-hmm.
question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would think that for some, and maybe most, that's a kind of scary proposition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of reminds me, if you ever watch cartoons, and there's a character who's just running, and they get to a cliff, and they keep running over the cliff, but they don't fall.
Right.
And they go
right.
Get out. And then at
right.
some point, they have this realization.
That they're up
here. Hey, what happened to the ground? You know?
Yeah, and then they
look at you, and then they go, zip. And then they go
they're
down.
Dead.
You know,
exactly.
This moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Their moment.
You know,
yeah.
Perception, reality hits
mm-hmm.
them.
You're right.
That all of a sudden the ground is no longer there. And I think sometimes that's the feeling we get
mm-hmm.
if we kind of like, you know what? What happens if I no longer have this body, which is
uh-huh.
an illusion, which Eckhart Tolle says is an illusion anyway.
Right.
But we're kind of like, whoa, just for a moment, we're just kind of like hanging out there. You know, we have the ability to just stay there, but then the fear takes over, and we want to get grounded again, or we fall.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because all of a sudden, you know, our trust factor is like zero.
You're right.
But we have the ability to fly or the ability to walk on air, and then when we kind of come to our five senses,
right,
or limiting, they're limited by the body because they're part of the body, you know, all of a sudden, we're like, oh, my gosh, I got to get back to what I know.
Right.
To the limit that I've
right.
always known.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what you were mentioning, like, whoa, wait, what happened here? Who am I?
Yeah, exactly. Without the body, who am I? That's the question. Who am I without it? What do I do? And that's something, you know, those some of those deep contemplative thoughts that, you know, our spiritual teachers have had and coming up with those answers and those perspectives. But, you know, the journey is that each person has to discover that understanding for themselves. That doesn't mean that you don't have a teacher. You have a teacher to show you the path, but you have to walk that path yourself and come to that realization yourself. Nobody can give it to you. They can just teach you about it or talk about their experience of it. But you have to experience that yourself, you know, in order to understand it. And that's what I really come to understand, because I know I was taking a class and they were talking about some spiritual practice. And I was saying, well, I don't understand it. I knew about it, but I still don't understand what it meant. She says, you have to experience it, and then you will understand it. And I'm like, okay. So you have some knowledge. You know something. You have to experience that. Something that you know, and then you get the understanding after the experience. It's like, oh, so that's what that means. It's like, you know, you can go and take, you know, some driving classes and looking at the video, and they're teaching you about driving. But it's not until you get behind the wheel of that car that you understand what it means to drive. As long as you're in the passenger seat, the passenger and the driver are having two different experiences in that one car.
Uh-huh, for sure.
Two different experiences. So at one point, you know, you're the passenger. You can enjoy the scenery. You can do all this stuff. But the driver is having a wholly different experience because they're more focused on the road and what they need to do. And so that's the difference between experiencing something and just knowing about something. And once you get into the experiential phase of it, it creates the understanding. And that was something that was an eye-opener for me, that in order for me to understand something that I know, I have to actually be in the experience of that thing, and then I will understand it, not before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's not always a cut-and-dry, you know, one-shot deal where, oh, I experienced it. I understand it. You know,
right?
It
yeah.
happens over time. You know, we get it
right.
in increments most of the
and
time.
It, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like we would love to have that quantum quickening, where
uh-huh.
I have a thought and I have an instant experience of it,
mm-hmm.
or I am so aware of this thought, and I am so open that the experience manifests immediately, even as I'm thinking that thought.
Right.
You know, and yes, our New Thought teaching pretty much says that that's how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
However, it seems as though we have too many filters that get in the way, filters of doubt, of fear,
mm-hmm.
of the ego, you know, just wanting to control the whole journey.
Right.
So all of these things get in the way of our immediate manifestation of that divine thought that just comes in.
Right.
You know, that's why inventors you know, will lock themselves up, and artists and, you know, people who are musicians who are just creating it, they don't want any outside influences to come in to interrupt their flow.
Exactly.
You know, and because they're really working on allowing that to express through them.
Right.
And I love that word express, and I was just reading something, I don't remember where I read it. It talked about the word express. X means to, you know, the outward, to go out or to be out, and press.
Mm-hmm.
So express is to press out.
To press out, so, yes.
So spirit is always pressing out.
Pressing out, yeah.
So doing its best anyway. You
right.
know, because we've already believed in the illusion and the body and the form. And so spirit is like, hey, you know, here I am, you know, I'm coming out, you know, and we're putting up barriers and blocks and
mm-hmm.
and not being loving or compassionate, all these different ways that spirit can express,
right.
you know, avenues and venues in which spirit can show up,
right.
you know, that love can show up, and joy and all of these other, you know, divine experiences. So we get caught up in the form, and it slows down that expression.
Right.
It doesn't stop it necessarily, but it slows it down.
It slows it down. Right.
You know, maybe they got to come back a few times to the planet to allow it to express. But what he says in Beyond Happiness and Unhappiness, Chapter 9, A Different Reality, is that on page 165 in the hardcover. And I do want to recognize that we do have another caller on the line who hasn't chosen to say anything yet. But, you know, if you do want to say something, just press the number 1 on your phone, and I can see in my studio here that you'd like to contribute. And I'm also going to open up the chat room in case anybody would like to contribute through the chat room. And we're going to say hello to Brenda. Hi, Brenda. Welcome. I'm glad that you can join us.
Hello, Brenda.
Yeah, so it says on page 165, nothing is what it seems to be. This
mm-hmm.
is in the middle of the page. The world that you create and see through the egoic mind may seem a very imperfect place, even a veil of tears. But whatever you perceive is only a kind of symbol, like an image in a dream. It is how your consciousness interprets and interacts with the molecular energy dance of the universe. This energy is a raw material of so-called physical reality. You see it in terms of bodies and birth and death, or as a struggle for survival. An infinite number of completely different interpretations, completely different worlds, is possible and, in fact, exists, all depending on the perceiving consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why each of us is all living in our own version of
right.
the world, your perception. That's pretty much how
right.
we start off this show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's your perception, yeah.
Very much for me living in your dream and you living
mm-hmm.
in my dream.
mm-hmm.
And so he says, every being is a focal point of consciousness, and every such focal point creates its own world. Although all those worlds are interconnected.
Right.
There's a human world, an ant world, a dolphin world, and so on. I guess that means there's a mosquito world, too. I'm just grateful. I'm not going to speak too much on them because I haven't seen too many this summer, so I'm just going to not speak them into existence in my world.
Your world, yes.
You know, and so on. There are countless beings who consciousness frequency is so different from yours that you are probably unaware of their existence as they are of yours. So we're pretty much minding our own business.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It says, highly conscious beings who are aware of their connectedness with the source and with each other would inhabit a world that to you would appear as a heavenly realm, and yet all worlds are ultimately one. Now, that's really nice.
That's really nice. And the key point here, he says, the highly conscious beings who are aware, and that awareness, we're talking about consciousness again, is to become aware of these things. Not that they don't exist, we're just not aware of them. You know, and it's just like sometimes when we misplace something, it could be right in front of us, but we don't see it, you know. And we could look and look and look, and we can't find it. And then we go out of the room and come back, and there it's sitting right there on the table.
Yeah.
And, well, we didn't see it because we weren't aware. It's a matter of awareness, of consciousness, of our connectedness.
Let me ask you then. Now, in science, in religious science or science of mind or any almost any new thought religion or teaching, the whole idea is oneness.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, to me there seems to be a bit of separation here because a highly evolved, highly conscious being is going to recognize mm-hmm. oneness that is all of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like moving beyond recognizing separate beings who have separate worlds. It's like it's only one life. It's like there's only
right.
one world. You know, there's everybody has a different perception of that world.
Right.
But there's only one world.
Right.
And then I would like to think that the highly conscious being is recognizing that there's only one world.
And each person in it is having their own experience of it.
However, wouldn't you think that it goes even beyond that, that there's only one experience?
You could say that if you're talking about multiple levels of experiencing.
No, only one. There's only one experience. You see, and I think this is my question to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can we actually embrace in our minds, in our brain, you know, let's expand our capability to like, you know, what is the highest possibility that there's only one life, there's only one world, and everybody,
mm-hmm.
there isn't even any more everybody. There's just one.
Mm-hmm.
All there is one, oneness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what could be said after that? Because I think that's what we're all doing our best to achieve. We're getting
to gain the
realization
mm-hmm.
of oneness.
Exactly, and that's what we're talking about, that realization or that awareness of that. And that's what we are here to become more aware of, is that we are one. We are all in this world as one, and we are all living that same life, although it appears to be a different life or a different section or a different reflection of it. It's the diamond with all the faucets or the holistic hologram that everything is contained in all of its parts, like the drops of the water in the ocean. Everything is contained in all of its parts. But how many drops are there in the ocean? It's all one, you know, the same. But each one then is having its own experience of that oneness.
Right, and that's when we're dipping back down into belief in form and
mm-hmm.
belief in more than one.
Well, I wouldn't say belief in, but I would say experiencing.
Because
right, well, yeah, cause the because question, that begs the question, to me, that begs the question, well, why is it all here in the first place? What's the point of it? What's the point of it? If the Creator created it, what was the point of it at all anyway? And so and
like,
so to me, the point of it all.
Let me see. what else can I make? You know.
Yeah, what else can I do? Because I'm bored. I want to do something, right?
Well,
you know,
I don't
like
know
kids.
Support, but
well, I'm just saying in terms of our human perception. If you look at kids, you know,
right.
they want to do something. They want to create something. They want to be active. They want to be engaged. You know, they don't want to sit around doing nothing. And so, in that sense, the Creator created life to experience it as different aspects of itself. And so, I mean, so there's no one definitive answer to that because you know, in order to do that, we have to know what the mind of the Creator is. We can only speculate at what it may be or how we perceive it. But as we become more and more conscious of that, then we can see it with greater and greater views.
I just had an image, and this is something it's really scary because I think I do remember going through this as an infant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a summer camp experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost positive I remember experiencing this myself.
Okay.
I remember parents putting down us little infants, like at a starting line,
mm-hmm.
and then moving back, and then we all have to crawl to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and whoever crawls to the parent first wins. You know,
okay.
They,
mm-hmm.
the mother and infant wins.
Right. Right.
So it reminds me of when you were speaking that, okay, well, here's God, you know, that just spits out all these beings, and
mm-hmm.
this whole purpose is to come rushing back to the parent, coming
mm-hmm.
back to Father, Mother, God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that it's a race,
mm-hmm.
but that's our purpose, is to come on back.
Come on back,
you know,
right.
Some kids just sit there, and they soil their diapers, and, you know, come on. You know,
yeah.
everybody's, you know, come on, baby, come on,
mm-hmm.
come to mommy, come to daddy, you know.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting there, you know. But the whole object of it all is to come back to the parent.
Right.
It's like yo-yo, you know. It's like there's a yo-yo game, a move where you throw the yo-yo out and it zips right back to you.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, when you ask the question, like, you know, God, you know, just say, oh, well, let me just see what else I can create. But
mm-hmm.
it's not just to create, but it's to create with the express purpose of coming back home, coming
right.
back to consciousness, recognizing
mm-hmm.
that, wait a minute, I know where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the one.
Right.
I am one. As a matter of fact, this is who and what I am. I might seem to be a drop in the ocean, but my consciousness tells me I am the ocean.
Right.
I think this is kind of what this is talking about. You know, where he says, where all worlds are ultimately one.
Right.
Aware of our connectedness. And so then we no longer become beings. We, you know, have joined the total collective. What were we saying last week? I think that one person in Buddhism, I think the belief is that nobody gets enlightenment unless everybody gets enlightenment.
Uh-huh.
We can't get to it singularly. There's no such thing as, okay, you know, I get to the parent and everybody else is on their way. We all get to the parent at the same time. Why?
Right, okay.
Why? Because all there is one. There's only one consciousness. So when one person gets it, we all get it.
Okay.
So we all get it. There's nobody that doesn't get it.
Okay.
So that's an interesting concept.
That's a very interesting concept, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. So I guess it would be that nobody's gotten there yet.
Well, you know, they talk about the 100 monkey theory, too.
Gets there, we all get there.
Well, in the 100 monkey theory, you know, there's a tipping point in the consciousness that then it just shifts everything. With that, and they've discovered that through the monkeys washing their potatoes in the ocean during the war when they were dropping potatoes on these islands so the monkeys could have something to eat. And they realized that not only were the monkeys on this island doing it, the monkeys on all the islands seemed like all of a sudden just everybody started doing it. And so there's a shift in consciousness at a certain level. And we talk about the scientific proof about the consciousness belt that goes around the earth. There's actually like the part of the atmosphere. There's a consciousness belt. And so when we do our prayers and our meditations, we contribute positively to this consciousness belt. And when we do bad things, you know, negative things, we contribute negativity to this consciousness belt. But after a certain point in that consciousness belt, when it becomes at that tipping point, then everybody gets it. You know, and all of a sudden you wake up and you say, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. I think I'll do something a little bit different. And you just don't know why you want to do something different, but you want to do something different. You want to handle it differently. So instead of getting mad, you're like, okay, I'm not going to get mad today. I'm just going to chill. I'm just going to let it be. And it just happens, you know. So there's theories on how it happens and why it happens, but they do have the proof of this consciousness belt and the tipping point in consciousness, when enough people get it, and there's a small percentage of the human race that needs to get that particular understanding and attitude, and then it tips to towards greater good for everybody.
Yeah, you know, some people actually have doubted the phenomena of the 100th monkey,
mm-hmm.
Thinking that, you know, there wasn't enough either information to support the theory,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, it just, you know, it wasn't enough evidence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
but
that,
they continue to prove those experiments with different ways that they do the maze with the rats, the lab rats and stuff like that, and they've done different things.
Uh-huh.
And they still come up with the same conclusions where these rats are separated through in different countries, and
mm-hmm.
they will take one group and they will do something with it. And then they have these control groups, and then all of a sudden all of them are doing the same thing that the main group is doing. It's a lot of scientific stuff. I'm just saying
sure.
that there's a tipping point in consciousness where we can come to an conclusion that we just take certain things for granted, whereas before it wasn't the case, and we just can decide then we can act in a different way. But, you know, no,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't know the mind of God, so, you know, all of this speculation to a great extent.
All right, so... he continues on in this section, The Power of Now, by saying, the world as it appears to us now is, as he said, largely a reflection of the egoic mind,
mm-hmm.
fear being an unavoidable consequence of egoic delusion. It is a
mm-hmm.
world dominated by fear. Just as the images in a dream are symbols of inner states and feelings, so our collective reality is largely a symbolic expression of fear and of heavy layers of negativity that have
mm-hmm.
accumulated in the
collective human psyche. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we
yeah.
call race consciousness.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Or the consciousness belt that I just finished, that I just spoke about. The collective
mm-hmm.
human psyche, yeah.
Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
and so what happens is when people are walking around the planet unconscious, they don't realize how affected they are by all of this energy going around. Now, he calls it negative energy. And, you know, we've already gone through chapters of what he calls it heavy layers of negativity. So people who are bought into negativity, you know, are going to have that energy. But we know that, you know, as we be reading this and becoming enlightened, that it's neither good nor bad. You know, it's only
right.
done by the belief.
Right.
And so, and it says, we are not separate from our world. So when the majority of humans are not separate from our world, I mean, so when the majority of humans become free of egoic delusion, this interchange will affect all of creation.
Mm-hmm.
That's so why it's so important to do prayer in groups or,
mm-hmm.
or every now and then you'll see an email that says, okay, everybody, pray at the same time, you know, no matter where you are on the globe, you know, just figure out the time zone
mm-hmm.
and everybody be into prayer at the same time.
Right.
And
right.
that will create a shift.
A shift, right. Exactly.
You know, not just in consciousness, so it's just where it starts, but a shift in what we perceive as reality and form.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It says, the strange Buddhist saying that every tree and every blade of grass will eventually become enlightened points to the same truth.
Right.
And I like that. I like to.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole of creation. St. Paul says the whole of creation is waiting for humans to become enlightened. So everybody else is waiting for us.
Mm-hmm.
The grass and the trees and the animals are like, come on, guys, wake up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wake up.
Wake up, humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wow. He says, what is being born is a new consciousness and, as is inevitable, reflection, a new world. Well, that's interesting because I get the feeling it should say one world.
Right.
You know, it's a new world, but one world. You know, that as we wake up to the truth, each and every one is more involved in one world. You know, our perceptions are becoming more aligned with each other.
Right, exactly. And you'll find people coming into more harmony and agreement over things that, you know, you discuss, and they say, yeah, well, that's true. And I've noticed within myself in New York City, come on, you know, everybody talks about how hard New York City is, but there are more beautiful, wonderful, caring people here than you would realize, you know. And being conscious of that, you know, I experience more harmony and joy and love when I'm out and about interacting with almost anybody. It's just like great. It's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I didn't experience before because I wasn't at this conscious level before, you know. So I can see how that happens and what those transitions are just in everyday going about your business. You can witness the change in the consciousness, or you witness the change that your consciousness has on the people that you interact with, whichever way that goes. Maybe it goes both ways.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about this earlier today, and it says, when Jesus said, be in the world but not of the world, you know. So you're in the world, and you're doing whatever you need to do, but you're not of it. You're not of all of this negative stuff, you know. You're not of that heavy collective human psyche. You know, you've risen above it so that you're not in it. You're in it, but you're not of it. You know, you're not taking on that.
Right.
And he says, I have overcome the world, you know, and he could move freely as he wanted, and all his needs were already met, you know. And so it's like, okay, so going to that. And I was thinking about also in the Garden of Eden, they had the two trees, the tree of knowledge of right and wrong and the tree of eternal life. And Adam and Eve, the story goes, chose the tree of knowledge of right and wrong. And I'm always wondering what happened to the tree of eternal life, you know. And so what I... Huh?
Still there.
It's still there, right? And so what started to come to me was that we experienced the tree of knowledge of right and wrong, of polarity, you know, up and down, in and out, good and bad. We experienced that in order to get to the tree of eternal life. So we experienced that tree, and then we can move over to the other tree and say, wait a minute, I don't have to be in this tree. I can go and be in the other tree, you know, live under the other tree. And as we go through the tree of the right and the wrong and the knowledge and stuff like that, and our consciousness evolves to the place where we realize that, you know, this is not necessary. I can go over here and be in that peace of God and that eternal life and knowing that that is the truth of what really, really is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just a thought I had as I was doing my meditation one day, is that that's the tree of eternal life. But we chose the tree of right and wrong, of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't even say right and wrong, just knowledge, you know, because we have our different experiences of the knowledge. But once we understand what's going on with the tree of knowledge, then we can choose then to live on the tree of eternal life. And that's when you get free of the illusion, and you can be in that presence and being that oneness. And then have whatever experience you want to have without it being a positive negative. It can just be one wonderful thing after other. Or you can choose to have a negative one if you want to, but, you know, if you want to call it negative. But, you know, it's what you're choosing consciously at that time, and that's what you're going to experience.
Yeah.
Without the pain and suffering.
He says on page 166, and thank you for that,
mm-hmm.
He says, your primary task is not to seek salvation through creating a better world, but to mm-hmm. awaken out of identification with form.
Right. Because uh-huh.
you are then no longer bound to this world. And this is on the bottom of page 166.
I see it now. Yeah, I see it.
This level of reality. You're no longer bound mm-hmm. to it. Says you can feel your roots in the unmanifested mm-hmm. and so are free of attachment to the manifested world. You
right.
You can still
uh-huh.
enjoy the passing pleasures of this world.
Right.
There's no fear of loss anymore, so you don't mm-hmm. need to cling to them. And
mm-hmm.
he says, although you can enjoy sensory pleasures, the craving for sensory experience is gone, as is the constant search for fulfillment through psychological gratification through feeding the ego.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you are in touch with something infinitely greater than any pleasure, greater than any manifested thing. So in a way, you don't need that. You don't need the world anymore. You don't even need it to be different from the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
Right.
Well, to me, that reminds me of that biblical saying, you can be in the world but not of it.
Not of it, right, exactly.
You know, and that, I think that's kind of like where he's going with that.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, where I'm realizing, yeah, okay, there's only one world, but I'm not a product of that those old perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Or anybody else's perception of the world or life. So, would you do, please, so I'm, it's on page 166, moving to 167.
Right.
So, is there anything, I do want to say, I like the part about you become the light of the world. I'd
mm-hmm.
like you to maybe talk about that middle paragraph, if you don't mind.
The middle one?
Yes.
Are you talking about, you may remember?
That's the one.
Okay. You may remember that we talked about the dual nature of true compassion, which is awareness of the common bond of shared mortality and immortality. At this deep level, compassion becomes healing in its widest sense. In that state, your healing influences the your healing is primarily based on not doing, but on being. And everyone, everybody you come into contact with will be touched by your presence and affected by the peace that you emanate, whether they are conscious of it or not. That was like reminds me when Jesus is moving through the crowd and people being healed just by being in his presence or just by touching, you know, the big story was when she touched the hem of his garment, she became whole. He became healed. It is just there. And, you know, sometimes you're around people that you just feel good about being around them, and you don't necessarily know why you feel good, but they just make you feel good because they have that higher level of consciousness, and they bring that presence, and then they can feel that energy that's emanating from you because we all feel of energy, and we interact, and we affect each other's field of energy. But the one who has the highest elevation of energy, which means more at peace and of love and compassion within themselves, can draw up those people who are not there yet, or who are looking for that, or who are open to receiving that, and then they become healed in a sense of their fears or their misgivings or their what angst about certain things. They can feel a lot better. I know I've been in situations where I have felt better and come into some realizations just by being around certain people and watching them and interacting with them, and I've been able to release some things and saying, oh, that's not even necessary for me to even go there. You know, I've seen somebody not go there. And it has a very, very healing presence with almost anybody who's open to it. It says, when you are fully present and people around you manifest unconscious behavior, you won't feel the need to react to it. So you don't even give it any real reality. Your peace is so vast and deep that anything that is not peaceful disappears as if it never existed, you know? And I think that is really something because it's like turning on the light in a dark room. You know, you come in and you're the light in that dark room. And so the people who have that darkness about them, they can't even hold on to it because it just has to leave. It can't even stand it. You know, so I know that I have seen people change their behaviors, like the cop sitting on the block, you know, everybody around changes their behavior because the cop is sitting on the block. So when this person of this greater light or greater consciousness or higher elevation in consciousness, higher awareness of what's really going on comes into that environment, then the people who have that lower vibration are automatically drawn up into that higher one. It's like heating up a cold room. You know, what happens to the coldness when the heat comes in? It just disappears. And so what happens to this negative energy when that positive energy or that higher elevation of energy comes in? It rises up or just dissipates, and then it becomes part of that, which is really real and becomes part of that peace that they talk about, that peace that surpasses all understanding. It says, animals, trees, flowers feel your presence and respond to it. You teach through being, through demonstrating the peace of God. You may become the light of the world, an emanation of pure consciousness. And so you eliminate suffering on the level of cause. You eliminate unconsciousness from the world. And that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
As we continue to become greater and greater, become into a greater and greater awareness of this emanation of pure consciousness, then we automatically shed light to those people who haven't gotten there yet, to that consciousness, and say, this is what it is, this is what it looks like. And here is an example, and this is the thing, too, about having a model. And this is where our deep thinking teachers have provided us with these models that we can emulate. We need to have a model. We need to be able to see somebody doing it so we can experience that and say, oh, they did that, so now I can do that, you know. It is possible to do that. And so as we continue to evolve and become more enlightened, meaning letting things go, I used to think enlightenment to accumulate certain things and certain knowledges. It's not that. It's letting stuff go. Our misperceptions, our fears, our doubts, our anxieties and stuff like that, we let that go, and we come into the presence of knowing that it's all good. And we can let go of the fear that it's not good. It is all good. And so as we become more like that, then we emanate that consciousness. And that consciousness then eliminates the suffering of the others because they become more present.
That's great. You know, and let me ask you, because sometimes, you know, it's like a cliche when we say, oh, yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I what comes up for me is, well, what makes it all good?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to think that, you know, this is such a simple way of understanding, a simple teaching, a way of
mm-hmm.
a way of being educated in a higher education to a higher enlightenment.
Right.
Is if we say it's all good, mm-hmm. and usually I know a lot of, I'll hear people say together, it's all good because it's all God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for me, that kind of puts it more into context by saying it's all good because it's all
mm-hmm.
God.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
so there is no bad, you know, everything that happens. And again, we're going even moving, taking a look at what's come up in the previous section, is that so much of what we experience is an illusion, or he said part of the egoic mind.
Right.
And form that we can say, you know what, it's all good because 99% of what we're experiencing is illusion anyway.
It's illusion anyway, yeah.
You know, so it's all good. That 1% is a whole great, a lot. That's the 1% is really the 100%. But we're so caught up in the 99% of the illusion. And the 99% is really the 1%.
Right, and when we realize that we are being caught in the illusion, we realize it's all good because it's not even real, you know, and it's like watching a movie, you know. You can get caught up in the movie, but when the movie's over, you're done, you know.
You can turn the movie off.
You can turn it off.
It's not real.
Yeah, it's not real. But while you're watching the movie, you know, you're in it. And so to me, that's the same type of a thing, you know. While we're watching it, we're in it, but we can realize while we're in it, we realize it's not even real, and then it's all good because we become a witness to it, and we just enjoy the show or change the movie, one of the two, whichever
you know,
way.
Today I was outside for my job for a break, and I was talking to one of our friends, and I was standing next to a parked car, and as I was just talking, I happened to look kind of in the car. I wasn't looking in the car, but my glance at somebody moved, and there was a woman on the phone, and she was texting, and she was crying.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot inside of me that started to say, oh, let me see if I can help her. You know, why are you crying and all that? And you know what? I said, that doesn't mean that something bad is happening because she's crying.
Right.
Didn't look like she was overjoyed either, but I had to get with me.
Mm-hmm.
A moment and say, okay, well, that's only my perception.
Right.
That something's wrong.
Exactly. And
before I went back upstairs, just for a moment, I started to walk back over, and just ask her. And as I did, she still had tears coming down her face, and I had to just remind myself that doesn't mean it's bad.
Uh-huh.
She's just crying. It could be for any reason.
Right.
But I did feel while I was standing there that my presence made a difference.
Uh-huh.
In whatever she was going through.
Right.
I felt like, you know, I don't need to ask her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to look at her. I don't need to think anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to be who I am.
Present.
I can be the one that stands there.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets to go through what she's going through, and everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of got a sense of that. Like, you know
mm-hmm.
what? Like, who we are transcends our form.
Right.
Where we don't have to revert back to form to get a message across.
Right. We can hold
you
that
know?
Consciousness.
So,
yeah.
And he says, you teach through being, through demonstrating the peace of God, so I can be at peace.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you become the light of the world, an emanation of pure consciousness.
Right.
So you eliminate suffering on the level of cause. Now,
right.
I don't know what was causing her to cry.
Uh-huh.
And it was up to me to determine if it was good, bad, or, and that's why I need to jump in and save
right.
the day. No more tears for you. You know, I didn't, so that was in my mind. That was ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for that moment, I was able to suspend the egoic belief that something was wrong and that there was something that I could do to change her, you know, existence.
Right.
You know, or however God was expressing it. Now, I can also look at it, though, whatever she was going through was assisting me
mm-hmm.
on my journey.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, gee, how do I get to uphold a practitioner consciousness? It doesn't
right.
say anything is wrong.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I get to, and that's what's that's compared in some ways to in the mind of Jesus or any other enlightened being that
mm-hmm.
can approach the situation and see the wholeness in it, see the oneness.
Right.
See the
uh-huh.
perfection. You know, this is what it's about for us.
If that's exactly. And as
and
we do
as
that, we become that light.
Feeling,
yeah.
Feeling the peace
mm-hmm.
in the situation.
Hmm.
It reminds me of the
one.
Song
yeah.
that we open up with. There's a light that shines in me.
Shines in me, yes.
You know? That's what it's about. And when I think when we all get to that point, and that's why we love going to retreats and conferences and things of that nature where we're all there in one mind, you know, just sitting and listening or singing or praying or whatever we're doing, and we feel so high, you know, while we're there and when it's over.
Right.
So, and we just want that to last. We want that to continue and feel, you know, coming from that place of like, wow,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I feel it. I feel that
okay.
heightened energy, awareness, you know.
Okay.
We get that,
We do. We get there. And we have glimpses of it on the way, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then at a certain point, you know, our glimpses become more frequent and last longer. And as we continue to grow and develop, and this is what, you know, being in a like-minded community is all about, where we can support each other in that knowing, in that awareness, and lift each other higher through our interactions and our examples and the teachings and our spiritual practices, we become more and more aware of it, and we can all get there together, you know. We all can get there together as we support each other on that journey. Yes, indeed. I love it. It's just wonderful. And it's such talking about a peaceful life, you know, we can have that joy and that peace and all of that we want as we become more consciously aware that is available to us as we let that other stuff go. We just need to let it go, but it's easier said than done. We need to have each other to do that.
Yeah, I would like to think, and I've heard this in many different ways, that we're all teachers for one another here on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that we're all... This I've heard it said in so many different ways. We're all angels for each other. We're all teachers
mm-hmm.
for each other. We're
mm-hmm.
we're all here to guide each other on our
mm-hmm.
collective, on our individualized path. You know, which
mm-hmm.
which seem separate from another, but we're all headed in the same direction.
Same direction, yeah, exactly.
You know, and mm-hmm. and it's like this all this agreement that we're all here to assist each other at one point or another, and it doesn't all, always have to look the same. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes there are harsher lessons than others for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So Eckhart Tolle is on page 168. He says, when a hungry person asks you for bread and you have some, you will give it. But as you
right.
give the bread, even though your interaction may only be brief, what really matters is this moment of shared being, of which
mm-hmm.
bread is only a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
A deep healing takes place within it. In that
mm-hmm.
moment, there's no giver, no receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are going through these lessons, like, you know, and mentioning that woman crying in her car, she may have been not a receiver. She might have been a giver or a giver
mm-hmm.
and a receiver. So she's giving me a lesson, as well as my presence, standing there and maybe not interrupting her. That could be one example. You
right.
know, so there's a shared thing going on there. We're
right.
speaking to each other. We're giving and receiving to each other.
Exactly. Now, that's an experience of being a parent. That's when I first felt that there's no giver and no receiver in the parent-child relationship. It's all one. When I give to my child, I'm actually giving to myself. And when my child gives to me, they're actually giving to themselves. And I have that profound experience being a mother, that there's no giver, no receiver. We are just one taking care of each other. We are part of that same thing. And there is no gift without a receiver, you know. And there is no receiver without a gift. And so we are back and forth with it together. It's all part of that whole circle of giving and receiving is in it. And when you can give and be grateful that you're able to give, and you can receive and be grateful that you're able to receive, and your giving and the gratitude that you have in that experience of giving and the gratitude that you have in the experience of receiving is what's shared between the two of you, that sense of gratitude. I'm glad I was able to give you the bread, and you're glad you received it. You know, so we're both one in that gratitude, and it's just a wonderful way of having a spiritual high by the giving and the receiving in that moment, and it's a beautiful thing.
Mhm. Yeah. So you know, we're almost through chapter 9, and just a wonderful discussion here, and the last little question that is asked says. But there shouldn't be any hunger and starvation in the first place. How can we create a better world without tackling evils such as hunger and violence first? And Eckhart Tolle says, all evils are the effect of unconsciousness. You can alleviate the effects of unconsciousness, but you cannot eliminate them unless you eliminate their cause.
Mm-hmm.
Change happens within, not without.
Mm-hmm.
It says, if you feel called upon to alleviate suffering in the world, that's a very noble thing to do, but remember not to focus exclusively on the outer. Otherwise, you will encounter frustration and despair. And I have to tell you, that's what I felt looking at the woman. I
mm-hmm.
wanted to stop her from crying.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to stop the outer. I had no
mm-hmm.
idea what was going on the inner, and I was already judging that the inner probably wasn't very good because that's why fine.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I could start to feel frustration and despair, like, oh, my God, she's crying. What can I do? There's nothing I can do, you know. And then, you know, I was alleviated from that, thank God. You know,
okay.
I realized, you know what, I can just stand here and be the light.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be a soothing presence. I don't have to try to dry her tears. You know,
right.
I don't. Just make a change on the outer, so everything looks fine on the outer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's only the effect of unconsciousness.
Consciousness, right.
Okay. Now, maybe, I don't know if it would be called evil if I was to disrupt her and say, what's wrong with you? Why are you crying?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But that would dip me into unconsciousness.
Right.
You know? And so I do want to say, though, that we are nearing the end of the show, and what I'd like to do is just for some final words on our parts, and we're going to finish up Chapter 9 and begin Chapter 10 next week.
So, okay.
What would you, anything, any final words for you?
Well,
the power of now?
Yes, and in the continuing what he says there, he says, without a profound change in human consciousness, the world's suffering is a bottomless pit. And Ernest Holmes says, you know, we don't fight against something. We stand for stuff, you know. So we stand for the consciousness of something happening in the right way. So we don't fight against it. We stand for it. And so when you fight against something, you create a greater reality of that thing. It becomes more and more difficult to deal with. It becomes that bottomless pit. But when you stand for truth and justice and compassion, then you're coming at it with a consciousness, a healing consciousness, rather than that negative despair.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's also part of turn the other cheek,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people think means if you get hit on one side, turn the cheek so you can get hit on the other side. No.
Right.
No, that's loving and compassionate. No, that's not
right.
what it means.
Right.
I think more means, well, if you get hit on one side of the cheek, of
mm-hmm.
your face, then obviously you believed in that possibility happening. You believed
mm-hmm.
in that being a lesson for you, that you believed
mm-hmm.
in being hurt. You believed in that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if you turn the other cheek, you're actually creating a different experience, and you're looking
mm-hmm.
at life in a different way.
You come in from a different consciousness, yeah.
Absolutely. You have a change of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, and thank you very much for bringing that up. And we'll continue with that next week. You're listening to One Love Center Presents, The Power of Now. You've heard from Reverend Hajar Rahim. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here with us all.
Our listeners and our participants online. And I just know that this is a continuing journey of enlightenment for each and every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to also point out that One Love Center is a member of Centers for Spiritual Living. We meet the first and third Sunday of every month at 11:30 a.m. at the Village at Gareje, 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, 11236. We meet the first and third Sunday at 11:30, and that means that it's this coming Sunday, and yours truly will be speaking, and the theme of the month is freedom. I'll tell you the topic. The topic is freedom ain't free. If you want to hear more, please show up and we're going to talk about freedom ain't free.
Freedom ain't free.
So One Love Center is a place where love grows. And we meet to provide a stable and welcoming community for all who choose to practice and grow, play, and unfold their understanding of spiritual principles. And we also envision a world as a sacred environment where spiritual growth and development flourish through living in the practice of spiritual principles. I say peace and love and blessings to each and every one of you. As we close out, we're going to listen to The Power Inside You by Stephen Wise, otherwise known as HPL. He's an awesome, wonderful being of light. This is from the album Transformation. Power is inside you. Thanks for your listening. Thanks for your love. Thanks for being in the now. Peace and blessings, everyone.
And good night.
Okay, guys. Hello.
Okay.
Hi,
hello. Yes. I'm here.
Yep. So,
hello.
Hi, Brenda. How you doing?
Okay. Awesome. Awesome.
Great. I'm glad you were there.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yep, yep.
Okay.
So, Hadra, you said you can make it to the movie tomorrow night?
I'm not going to be able to make it. I got too much on my list of things to do.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to do that because I got to spend that time doing some other things. what I wanted you to do is to bring your chairs with you just in case we need them.
You need me to bring chairs?
Yeah, just put them in your car.
Oh, okay. How many?
Just the black ones, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Just to be on the safe side, because I don't know how many people are going to show up yet,
folks
are going to want to sit down, you know? So we can have some extra chairs, that would be good.
All right.
Okay?
Yep.
All right, wonderful.
So I'm not going to be hanging out too late on Friday.
Okay.
I got to go to Long Island for a wedding on Saturday.
Okay. Are you doing the wedding?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Probably won't be doing till 2 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's fine. I don't know if anybody's going to really be doing till 2 o'clock, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I just put it on there because we're all grown. We're all adults, remember?
Yeah.
We can hang out if we want to. We don't have to. It's a choice. Yeah.
Yeah, well, everybody else can stay, but, you know.
Yeah, you're going to be out of there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. Yep. I'm hoping people don't stay until 2 because I don't think I want to be up until 2 either, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I thought, okay, so, you know, we're adults, so we can stay up as long as we want.
Yeah. So, yeah. Listen, I got to get into a class.
I know you do. Because I thought you were going to end it earlier than you did. I thought,
I've been checking in every now and then. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Awesome.
Well, that's good.
Awesome.
All righty then.
All right. Peace and blessings.
Okay. Love you all. Talk to you soon.
Okay, then.
You too. Good night.
Class is over at 9.
Okay. Well, you got a half an hour to go.
Yeah, it's on Adobe Connect.
Okay.
Let me close off this thing here. Okay.
Okay, then. All right. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.